Welcome to Snowflake Universe On-Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just want to know how to join us. We have a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. Or you can join us on Twitch. Go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. I will be streaming there and also be keeping an eye on the chat room there. So I'd be happy to talk to you there. And if, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. You can follow me and find out what's going to be the next topic for the week. And, of course, my personal account, Paul Franz, is there, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. Just a reminder, I do talk about being Catholic. I've shared podcasts, which I thought were really interesting to listen to. And, of course, all kinds of things tech, because I love that kind of stuff. And, of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various feeds around the net. So, quick news from A to B this week. They're still working on filming Master Starship book. They're preparing to put the Klingon DX and the Romulan SPX up on Shapeways. They've got the pictures. Now, I'm not sure if there's anything they have to change when it comes to the adjustment of the models themselves. And of course, Steve Pedrick has also been working on the Tholian Master Starship book. And Dean got married this week. Actually, got married last week. I'm repeating. But for those of you who missed it, he got married to Alec at a really quick ceremony with the Justice of the Peace because, of course, the coronavirus and all that kind of thing is throwing things completely up in the air when it comes to our lives and upending them. Thank you very much to your local virus. Moving on to the SFB Online tournament, well, the only tournament, which is Sapphire Star Tournament number 3 at the moment. Round 1 has completed. Round 2 is waiting on the matchup of replacements. While Bill Schiller completed both round 2 and round 3, and waiting in round 4, which is the final round, to find out who his opponent will be. Moving onward to the online client stuff, actually, I fixed an issue with the tractor beam. I found out that if you tractor like drones, and then you tractor a ship, it then changes your speed to speed 0. Which is interesting. I understand why it happened. I just goofed. But that will be released in probably either tomorrow or at the very latest this weekend. I definitely want to get that out the door. But I am definitely doing improvements. I'm working on improvements to the Federation Commander portion. And I'm going to redo the interface there because I know I screwed up and I want to fix it so that people can truly a Federation Commander experience. When it comes to library progress, unfortunately, there's no progress there. Still at 2,522 converted, yet to be converted, 799, with the percent complete being at 75.94%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Gary, we've got Barry, we've got Dave. It's going to be an interesting discussion. Hopefully, we don't put you guys to sleep. But if you're here to listen and talk about Starfleet battles and Omega and Federation Commander, this is your place. And every once in a while, Federation Empire, Lord knows, I don't know that much about Federation Empire. I should probably grab someone every once in a while for that. Of course, Starfleet Battle Force and other games that ADB produces. So, Gary, Barry, how you doing?
Am I unmuted?
You're unmuted.
We
are recording.
Yeah, and we are recording. Okay, cool. Well, I figured since we have Gary here and he's live, we might as well discuss the Federation Commander in Omega. Now, you had, Gary had said before the recording had started that, that you know, Federation Commander, of course, started with the Feds, Klingons, and Kazinis, and Orions, and then they did the Eastern Empire, which would have been the Romulans, the Gorns, and then where did the Hydrogens and Lyrans fit in? I forget.
Well, hello, everybody. First of all, before I jump into this, I just wanted to mention that next week, the next batch of Shapley's miniatures will include the Klingon DX and the Romulan Spirehawk AX. So if anyone wants to check out how those two designs are shaping up, there's threads on the ADB BBS showing the work that Matt Lawson's put in for the Spirohawk X and Will McCavin's put in for the DX. So they're both looking pretty impressive, and they're adding to the variety of X ships that people can find on the Shapeway storefront. So there's that. And of course, actually, I should note that speaking of X ships, is that there is a set of preview rules for some X ship weapons and systems in, for Federation Commander in Captain's Log 53. So there actually have been a bunch of, speaking of playtest SC products, there have been a number of ship cards, like playtest ones, done up for things like the Lyran Command Cruiser X and the Federation Heavy War Destroyer X and so on. So people can get those either in CL-53, there's like four of them in there, or they can go to the Commander Circle, and there's actually a number of them are available for free as in the communiques, well, as well, because communique doesn't really exist anymore. But yeah, so there's if people want to try those out, then they're more than welcome to. So because the more FedCom expands into new regions of space and new time periods, the better. So yeah, just to get back to the origins of FedCom, because I think it was about 2005 or so. There was, yes, as Barry was saying, there was Klingon Border, which introduced five empires, but only three of them in relative detail. Like, that was the Federation, the Klingons, and the Kazintis. And then there were some sample ships for both the Orions and the Tholians, but the rules for both of them were very constrained. Like, there were only web snare rules. Like, there weren't proper web generator rules, or the option mounts were very limited because there was only a handful of weapons that existed in the game to use. A couple of modules later, they introduced Romulan Border, which basically presented the Gorns and the Romulans together, as well as rules for stick and plasma torpedoes in option mounts for the Orion Pirates. And then from there, things basically, there was like a, I think the next project after those four, those starter four kits, was to bring the Tholians and the Neo-Tholians up to full spec. And then also throw in the Sartorians for good measure, so that you basically have the webcaster and then you'd have the webbreaker as well to go against it.
Right.
And interesting enough, that's basically the same pattern that both Starmada and a Call to Arms Starfleet have followed, because if you look for Book 2 of Act to ASF, which is on Warehouse 23 right now, and Director Opportunity, it basically does the same thing. It introduces the Neo-Tholians, gives you rules for web generating and webcasters. It also gives you the Sartorians. It gives you the battle wagon as well, which the Sartorians historically used to murder countless billions of Tholians in one go. Then, back to FedCom, they would basically introduce things like there was an Orion attack module, which included a bunch of extra pirate ships and rules and so on. And then you had Distant Kingdoms. That was the name of the starter module. Well, it wasn't the starter module.
For the Lyrans and the Hydrans, yeah.
That's right, Lyran's LDR, Hydrans, and Wind Cluster. And that would introduce things like the how to use the fish ships and those kind of things, whatever. And then, a bit later then, I think by about 2010 or so, several products later, there was War and Peace, which introduced the Interstellar Concordium and the Andromedans and the Vudar. And the Andromedans, of course, they're very different in FedCom, as I've mentioned to Paul a couple times.
Oh, we come to Andromedans! Anyway. Oh, hell yeah!
Yes. So hopefully some Fetchcom online players will get a chance to try that out at some point in the future. But anyway, so then, yeah, so basically, and actually these patterns would be followed in the other games too. So for example, there's a Distant Armada, which basically includes the ships from the two expansions that included the Lyrans and Hydrans and LDR and so on. So people could get them all at once. And provisionally, it's been suggested that those empires are going to show up in Book 3 of A Call to Arms Starfleet. So they'll be able to, if all goes well. So, you know, we'll have to see how that turns out. But actually, the really great thing for Acta SF is that there's so many ships on Shapeways now that it's an awful lot easier, because in the old days, like when version 1 of A Call to Arms was being done, they were still using metal miniatures from like the 2500s. And it took a while for each one to get up and running. And you'd almost think, I mean, even the range of ships that were in the first like products like stuff took a while to get up and running. But now there's like probably over 1,000 miniatures that are on Shapeways at this point, and you could do tons of empires and have most, if not all, of the ships ready to go. Even things like the Federation Galactic Survey Cruisers on there, and the a bunch of the carriers and fast patrol ship tenders, that sort of thing, whatever. So there's so many, you know, things that Shapeways makes easier to do now. So, but anyway, right. So in the midst of all this stuff that was happening with Federation Commander officially, I, like the fool I was, started off with both Module C5 for Starfleet Battles, and also I eventually got the Omega Master Rulebook. So now the first version of the Omega Master Rulebook only had the first four modules worth of rules. So in 2011, there was an update which included the Omega Gunboats and PF Tenders that are in Module Omega 5. And also updates a bunch of stuff from the previous four. So, but again, if anyone has,
I didn't know they had updated the Omega Master Rulebook. I have to re-download it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the 2011 update, it's got a bunch of the revisions and additional rules and stuff. And so, it's definitely a good one-stop shop for anyone to have.
Yeah,
so
I've got that copy.
Module C5. Did they update Module C5?
Well. See, what happened is that Module C5 has been uploaded to Warehouse 23, but it wasn't given quite the same... I mean, there's a lot of errata for it, as we were discussing with the Jamokians before. But the errata is basically what was happening is that when you download the file, the errata has basically been stuck to the back of each document. So, for example, if you download the C5 rulebook, you go to the very end, you see all the errata items. But it hasn't been fully consolidated and stuff, so
it hasn't been incorporated.
But I mean, just to bear in mind that it is still there, so like for certain empires it's worth keeping tabs on and stuff, whatever. But anyway, I mean, like, it's still a functional product, whatever, so it didn't have the same range of things that Omega has had and stuff. But I think part of that is also to do with the way in which, because when Omega was first done for Starfleet Battles, the decision was made to give it like an entirely different type of SSD design, which is fine in one sense, but it also means that it's not directly compatible with the standard SSD design types that you see for LMC and Alpha Octant and so forth. But interesting.
Yeah,
you know,
I think the Omega stuff was overall rushed out the door, because wasn't that when they were still under TFG, you know, where they're trying to get products out?
I don't think so. Basically, it was after ABB Inc. itself was incorporated. It was like one of the first products that emerged. But the thing is that, now, I don't think anyone realized this at the time, so it's easy to be critical in hindsight, so I'm trying not to be. I mean, C5 had the advantage of coming after Omega, so that they could think about what worked and what didn't, because when C5 was published, it had campaign compatibility for the three major empires. So you can play a campaign with the Inine or Batavai or Megadim and be okay, more or less. I mean, but with the Omega stuff, they went too thin, too far. Like, they basically did, they probably should have done only a handful of empires and give you more ships for them. But they themselves realize this. I mean, they say it as much in the design notes for Omega 2, as far as early as Module Omega 2, but kind of at the point where kind of basically stuck with it, whatever. But
But still, anyway. Gary, the problem is still to this day, I don't like the rules, like for the Omega, because of there's so much where it just says use the rules from the old rule book, you know, because there's two rule books. There's Omega and then there's the Alpha, Octane. And it's all, this is a phaser, but this has these minor little changes. Instead of incorporating, maybe even reprinting the rules, you know, reprinting those rules and just say, yeah, these are promos very, very similar to the phasers. This is, and if you look at it, yeah, it looks like a regular phaser. But, you know, and here, and this has this change and so forth. So it feels like it's an add-on, you know, when it comes to the Omega
rules. Well, the thing is that, I mean, like the Master Rulebook hasn't been updated to include the stuff from Module C5 either, and I wouldn't expect it to be.
Right.
Basically, the thing is that when you think about it, I mean, if you look at the file for the current 2012 edition of the SSB Master Rulebook, and bear in mind that this Master Rulebook has no R section data, it doesn't have the annexes, mm-hmm. it basically literally just has the rules, and the file mm-hmm. is, let's see now, the PDF is 468 pages long. So
yeah,
even just to play the Alpha Octant, to include the Andromedans, because of course you need the Andros like in Omega as well. Well, I don't need them, but they're handy to have.
Oh, great. It's a massive product. If you're going to do some later, later years battles, you need to include the Andromedans.
Yeah, so I don't necessarily think that that's the problem. I just kind of, I guess going forward, like I think it would be handy if... like, for example, we have a set of six playtest SSDs for the Zosman Marauders right now, and we've got rules and stuff. But I would like, now this is just my own personal preference, if there was ever a product in the future that either was the equivalent of what was given for the Borak and the Paladin, or even like a proper, like a fully published module, like Module C6 for the Paravians, the Alpha Octan Paravians mm-hmm. and the Carnivans, mm-hmm. I would like basically... the enough ships. Now, it doesn't have to be exhaustive, because the handy thing about the Zosmans is that their ships are modular, so you just have to provide the modules and the players can do the work for you.
Right.
But the as long as there are enough base hulls and bases and civilian units to basically allow the Zosmans to be a functional empire in one product. Like, you don't have to worry about the X-ships can wait for later, but as an actual modern technology era empire, they would be functional in one go. That would be enough. Because the handy thing is that they don't need any new weapons. They just mooch the weapons off everyone else.
Right, right.
Stealth-field rules are pretty... I mean, they need to... I mean, the current stealth-field rules don't explain how things like PFs work with the stealth-field, but that can wait. I mean, that could be in that kind of process. Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is that, I mean, it's even if it's going to be more of an incremental process to fix the older empires, at least with the ones that are on the... not fully on the table yet. They could hopefully be looked at in a different way. So,
right.
So what would be the next empire that you were thinking about incorporating for the Omega for Federation Commander?
Assuming that the playtest goes well and we can basically publish what we got with for the playtest rules for the current Omega rulebook.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, to go back to SFB, now, I'm not trying to delay, I just want to try to explain my line of reasoning here.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about how, like, in the Alpha Octant, it started off with the core, with the TV empires, East and West,
right.
And then expanded further out into the Octant. I think that in SFB, Omega should have done the same. Basically, start with the Mesonar Alliance, absolutely. Put in the Federal Republic of Aurora, because they're kind of like, they're not always the TV empire, but they're close enough in the sense that they use Terran-built ships. And there is to be a good introduction.
The first one you did was the Mazarons and the FRA, and who else?
Yep, so what I basically did is that I went kind of west, in a sense, because I started with the Troburn Empire and the Prober, because mm-hmm. they're two of the four superpowers, but they're the ones on the west side. And the Troburn are pretty good, and the Prober are interesting.
That's one way of putting it.
Well, I mean, historically, I'm saying, because the thing is that in a historical battle, yeah. there's enough room for them to maneuver properly. But, I mean, they're meant to be kind of like winging it, basically. They have the ships have wings. But in terms of like their economy, it's kind of like the reason why those ships exist the way they do is because they're cheapskate. Like, their economy's in ruins. And like, not ruins is not the right way of putting it, but they just can't. They're not that great with money. So they're basically trying to make it up as they go along. So, but the Trollbrunn and stuff, I think they're pretty interesting. And anyway,
absolutely.
So there's those two, and then I also included the Iridani questers, because I like the Iridani, and also they can show up anywhere, so they don't have to be tied to one place geographically. So what I would do is I would look to the east, and I would look at the Vari and the Kolagar. They're the two other superpowers, and they but basically complete the circle and stuff. They would be the major players, and so they'd be
Okay, can I give my thoughts on this?
Sure, yeah.
I think the Trollbrunn, and I'm going from the point of view, I created a whole bunch of tournament cruisers. And the Mazarons, I think we nailed them down pretty close. Having said that, if you're talking about the Mazarons for general purpose, the... Tachyon missiles, they were, now Bruce Graw had said, oh, these are going to be the ultimate seeking, modular seeking weapon. And I'm like, great, okay, so you're going to have a whole assortment of modules for these things, and you can, you know. And then there's more modules for regular drones than there are for tachyon missiles. And it's like, if they were supposed to be the superpower of the Omegas, and they were supposed to have the ultimate modular missiles, which I agree with, they needed more modules.
Well, at the same time, Barry, you two are similar, similar names. You got to kill me. But the one thing you got to keep in mind, those things might have been lost to the great hard drive crash.
Well, I know, but I created a couple of modules, which I emailed to the two Steves and said, hey, here's some ideas. And they're like, no. And it's like, well, they kind of need these.
Oh, understood, Barry. Now, the one thing you got to keep in mind when it comes to converting the Mazarron from the current SFB rules to FedCom rules, simplification. As it is.
Yes.
When it comes to the drones, you've basically got two types at the moment. That's it. You got your Speed 20. You got your Speed
Starfleet.
And Federation Commander. You have your fast. You have your Speed 20 drones, and you have your 32 drones. That is it. There is nothing else.
Type ones and type
fours. No, no, you don't.
They're all type ones.
All type ones.
Even for the prototype X-ship rules, the X-ships themselves, their drones are Speed 32, but they're not the same ones that are in Module X-1. They're the standard ones that non-X-ships have. So the main thing is that if you're playing in the middle years, your drones are Speed 16. If you're playing in the main era, it's Speed 24. And if you're playing after 2580 or with X-ships, they're Speed 32. But functionally, they explode the same. They do the same damage and stuff. And the thing about the... Okay, so there are a couple of... options that people can take for the tachyon missiles, pre-cooked ones, I should say, in the FC rulebook. But bear in mind that, well, first of all, no empire in Omega is supposed to be a drone-heavy empire, because Bruce was very clear at the when he was designing it for SFB that this would not be the basic happen. Or sorry, this would not be the same kind of thing that happened in the Alpha Octant, where you basically got carriers full of F-14s and F-111s, like, throwing a machine drones everywhere.
I know that, and Bruce was very careful about saying he was going to make sure that the seeking weapons were fewer in number, but more powerful. I think that was pretty much
I wasn't even too sure about that, because, the thing is that the main weapon that Mazarons are supposed to need to worry about are their tachyon guns, not their tachyon missiles. But from a universe standpoint... The main thing, advantage, that, well, the two main advantages that the Mazarons had were in terms of the engineering, because it said that because so many of their ships use the same firing platform, it made, there's like an economy of scale when they were actually building these ships. But also, they were basically three, what would have been three medium-sized empires by themselves, kind of coupled together. And even then, it took a while for them to actually figure out how to make things work and stuff. So it's more on the kind of the Federation and Empire scale that you would see that sort of thing happen and stuff. But anyway, so where was it? Yeah, but I should also note that those tachyon missile options, they're available for other empires that would have reason to use BMs in FC. So if people want to try those out, they can. But I was going to say, I would be interested in one day getting a look at both the Pelasgo and the Zosmans for FC, because it might be a bit of a challenge trying to represent some of their technology quirks and stuff. But I do think, as especially since both empires are available in Shapeways now, I think that they help add to the setting, because they're available as mercenaries and as traders and as pirates and stuff, whatever. So,
I agree. Belascos are going to be interesting, and we haven't actually discussed them, Paul. And that one of the empires that we need to. Yeah,
just that we haven't talked about the Quixar.
Yeah, I know. Well, the Belasco are much more doable than the Quixar.
Oh, understood. Quixar. Understood.
But the Probor, I'd like to get. Like to get back to, because that is I've found is an essentially broken race. And yes, I know that they're economically strapped, but at least their heavy cruiser is so the BPV values, it's like it's like so much less powerful than its BPV suggests.
But at the same time,
and certainly
really,
the tournament crew.
Okay. At the same time,
but I know.
Yeah. Well, you know how I feel about BPV, because trying to have a single number which defines how this ship reacts in battle is kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially considering that. The different kinds of battles that a ship might be involved in. And I really feel like most BPVs are not meant to represent a ship by itself for like duels.
Yeah.
That's a different kind of point value versus a BPV,
right,
which is designed for fleets. And how will it do as part of a overall fleet? You know, how valuable is that to a total battle in that case?
Yeah, I agree.
See,
but
part of the things is that some of the weapon systems and ship variants that they have, they only really work in a squadron or fleet battle. So, for example, the ability for players to adjust the target for a heat torpedo when it's in launch, which is not something that's in Federation Commander, I should point out, but. That it basically is, there's not really much point of it in when you're playing in a duel or a tournament, whatever. But if you're in a squadron, it's more of an issue. Well, I mean.
Actually, there is. And I can tell you exactly how that comes in. In a tournament cruiser, I can start off by launching a heat as a. What's it in a mode where it's basically not seeking a target per se, but on a ballistic course. And then after it launches, change its target to be the target that I really want it to be following. And what that allows you to do is to fire heats that are out of arc, and then have them retarget and then turn around and target the actual target, which means that heat it takes longer to get to its target, and it's more difficult to use, but it does give you the ability to fire out of arc weapons.
Well, I'm pretty sure there was a technical note about something like that as well, or a term paper rather. But one of the other things as well is that the Prober have variants which have the they swap the firing arcs basically for the target accentuators and the heats. So because like when you're just doing a duel, you have to keep the opposing ship in the front FA arc to be able to lock on with the target accentuator in the first place. But if you are doing that with a squadron that has an accentuation variant, you can basically be facing not in that arc. You can either be parallel to them or even be facing away and still target them that same way. So you can basically it makes it easier to play keep away, which of course for the Prober is much more important than it is for many other empires. Some of the empires that they're fighting, they're not particularly fast. I mean, the Troban might look scary with all those weapons, but after they've done their first, reloading them can be a challenge because, the torpedoes don't have fast load, and even the bolts. I mean, they're quite pricey if you want to arm them quickly. So that basically can make it more difficult for them to try to get in close enough for long enough that they can actually do some damage, whatever. So unless they're fighting over like a planet or something like that, whatever, where they can force the issue or something. But I don't know. I mean, like, I guess. I mean, it'd be great to see more people try the playtest ships for SC and see how they work in that game system. Because one thing that will make it different is because in SC, it's been said that plasma has a bit of a problem because ships are too fast to hit on a regular basis.
Right.
So if you're flying the Prober, then you actually might be relatively rare in the fact that you're expecting to hit them with them because speed 64 is available when you line things up properly with her. So, because I mean, even with the Trollburn and stuff, I mean, they're in FC terms, I guess the bolts are still handy, but the torpedoes and stuff, I mean, they'd have the same kind of issues that regular plasma would have.
The Prober, here's the problem with using the Prober accentuated heats. First of all, they're very expensive to arm, the standard heat. And then by accentuating it, you make it even more expensive. And then you have to pay for the target accentuators, which makes it even more expensive. And now that you've paid all that energy to arm this thing, when you accentuate it, it's less powerful, and they're already pretty feeble. I mean, the Prober heavy cruiser has four heats, which at standard strength does a max of 64 damage, which is reasonable, but it doesn't have an EPT. It doesn't have a fast load. Well, it does have a fast load, sorry, but that makes it even more expensive to hold. And accentuating it makes it more expensive to hold, but 64 points of damage, from a weapon that has no pseudos, and they do fall off, I think, a little bit faster than a standard torp, which I understand because if you accentuate it and it goes fast, then you increased its range. So, but the accentuated ones, you've got, they're very fast, but there are limitations with the limitations more in the target accentuator than the heat itself, in that there's an optimal range for firing the target accentuators that they actually work effectively, and it's easy enough to miss with them. So you want to be at the sweet spot before you fire the target accentuators, and then they only last so long, and very difficult to get the heat to actually hit at the shortest range, and your max damage is with four, and you can't always get all four of them in arc at the same time.
Right side, left side does not hurt. Does not help.
Well, the thing
left
is
side,
that,
right side.
But generally
targeting
speaking,
helps.
Well, the thing is that it's generally, I mean, in SFB at least, it's been suggested that historically, anyway, it's best to try to do basically only two at a time, like basically left side and then one turn, right side the other. And but mm-hmm. and also the thing about that you can bear in mind is that if you've got a squadron, say for example you've got an accentuation cruiser, it's got four TAs and two heats. You could basically decide to arm that ship with the TAs only, and then any ships that are in the same squadron don't arm the TAs on them. So you've got more power to arm the heats, and also the entire squadron. You can basically try to turn it so that you're only basically using one half per turn, and then using the other half per turn. So you're kind of almost like thinking like a Paravian rather than thinking like a Gorn or a Trobriand or whatever, because I mean the Paravians have to fire every turn to get their quantum wave torpedoes up, because individually they're not great. I mean they have the splash thing, which helps, I suppose. But I mean the thing is that also the Paravians, their weapons are their torpedoes, they're only speed 32, so they're still got the same speed issue. Also for playtest and Federation Commander, because there are Paravian playtests. There's a pack you can download from Warehouse 23, which has three Carnivon ships and three Paravian ships, as well as the rules needed to try them out in FC. But yeah, I mean, like, so
well,
it's,
let's look at the target accentuators. Let's look at the target accentuators. So, and I'm just going by memory, but I seem to remember that the optimal range for a target accentuator is what, around range 16 or so? As you get closer.
Yes.
To
13 to 16.
Yeah. What's that?
13 to 16 is 1 to 5 to hit.
13 to 16 is 1 to 5 to hit. So
yes.
That's where you want to fire the target accentuators. Otherwise, yeah, they're less effective. But if you're shooting, if you're firing target accentuators at that kind of range, and they only last 8 impulses, and okay. Now, yes, the accentuated torpedoes will hit at their before 8 impulses have gone by because they're going so fast, so they will do max damage. But if you're only firing half of them, that's total of 24 points for a heavy cruiser. And 24 points, That'll take down a shield, but it's not going to do much else.
But again, I mean, if you're flying something like a Paravian, you're not expecting to get much higher than that, because I mean, each individual quantum wave torpedo is only about as powerful as like a. Basically, it's interesting, and it uses almost the same firing chart as the PPD, but basically only one go at a time. So, but I mean, in those cases, I guess the Paravians are they're handy because their heavy cruisers got 20 boarding port parties, so. They want to get the shield down and then beam over and kill you in person. But the problem the Prober have is that their boarding parties aren't that great. So they don't really want to do the up-close-y-kill-y part that the Paravians do. But although I'd imagine the Paravians probably want to kill lots of Prober because they're like devil lizard beings or whatever. So, But anyway, so, actually that's another thing. It'd be interesting to see what the Paravians are like in Omega as well. But So yeah,
Their phasers are long range, but feeble beyond belief. Quantum phasers if you get close to a prober, it's over. That is the exact opposite of a knife fighter. Its phasers are feeble, and its torpedoes are feeble. And if you're only firing two, then yeah, I guess you have sufficient power. But I know that the tournament cruiser, I beefed the power up on that thing tremendously. I even added a fifth heat to it, and it still died in every battle. We couldn't figure out how to get it to win. I even added more phasers. So I added phasers. I brought the power up to 40 on their tournament cruiser, maybe even 42. I don't remember. Been a while, and I added a fifth heat, and it still was a unwinnable in that ship. And I know what you're saying about it's a fleet ship, but
the thing is that, I mean, even when you think about empires that you know, from, well, quote unquote alpha. I mean, there's been talk about like things like the Saltorians and stuff. I mean, their advantages may not necessarily translate into a tournament setting because they're really about, you know, knocking your shields down and then, you know, beaming over. So it's
yeah.
They're not necessarily like a stand up and fight empire by themselves.
Mm.
So, I mean, I think it's even in other parts of Omega, I mean, like the Vari, for example, I mean, the things get interesting when the Vari get their particle splitter torpedoes. But even then,
yeah.
You need the new generation ships that are built to use them properly because, like in, I think in Captain's Log 23, there's a couple of the older style Vari ships that have the torpedoes as a refit, and they're not very, they can't handle it. So, mm-hmm. But the thing with the Vari as well is that I can't help but feel that they're missing something in the sense that they're supposed to be about raiding species that they can feed on so they can feed on them. But their ships can't land on planets and they don't have very good boarding parties. So what I'm thinking is that maybe whenever we see more commando ships for Omega, it would turn out that the Vari just have loads of commando ships. And that's basically how, you know, a squadron balances rather than expecting the individual ships to do it, whatever. So, because it makes sense mm-hmm. if you've got a bunch of like crappy little weapons that fire regularly, if the goal is to, you know, down a shield and then, you know, get over there with the commando ship. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, it's unfortunate because yeah. so many of the Omega Empires, like we're basically in the same thing where some of them, we have a rough sense about how the synergy, I guess, is meant to work. But in other ones, it's just not quite all there yet, so it's
right.
not as easy to, you know, yeah. get a better feel for how the Empire works as a whole.
I know that, Paul. Maybe you know more of the statistics than I do, but for Starfleet battles online, what percentage of battles would you say are fought as tournament battles versus standard? The standard games.
Oh, these days? These days?
Yeah.
It's, they're like 50%, 50-50 at this point.
Oh, okay.
The number of tournament players has gone down, but the number of mm-hmm. campaigns games have gone up.
Mm.
Compared,
yeah.
In, you know, comparing the two.
I'm certainly responsible for some of that because I only played tournament and I've stopped playing.
I understand. Of course, your job does not help.
No.
But, you know, people move on and that's fine. That's why they came up with the Sapphire Star tournaments where you basically, you have to pay yeah. to play. The whole idea,
right.
the whole idea being that if you put money in, you're more...
There's an incentive to finish it.
Right, there's an incentive to play your games. Instead of, you know, real life came in the way, you know, and all of a sudden, a game that should have been over in 2 weeks takes you 6 weeks and therefore and kills the tournament. You know?
Right.
And since also we have, you know, Steve Petrick is really strict about the rules. This is the way it will be done. This is the schedule. If you can't match the schedule, don't sign up. You know.
Right, because you'll forfeit.
Right. Well, not your forfeit. We had an issue with that, the current tournament, and it's just a mess. Ended up being round two. It's going to be played by two substitute players because of course, the coronavirus thing, where one of them actually is Paul Graves. And Paul Graves is a professor. Unfortunately, the college that he's teaching at pushed all of the professors to go from in-person, you know, lectures and so forth to have the whole curriculum moved online. And they had like a week to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like his
yeah.
complete schedule got shot because of that.
Right.
And, you know, and Sapphire Star Tournament runs really, really tight. I mean, the whole idea is that you can get your round one, you have 3 weeks to get done your game. Round two, three, and four, two, three, and four. You've got 2 weeks to complete your game, period. That's it. You know, if you can't get done in 2 weeks, don't sign up. You know, the idea is that you put these games a priority of your, you know, available time. You know, not, you know, put it, you know, put your family behind, you know, playing a game. But the whole idea is that you make a commitment to play the games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Actually, there is one thing I wanted to point out as well, is that imagine if you had a tournament for the Alpha Octant, but it was middle-year ships.
Hmm.
So imagine if you had, say, a KR, if you even allowed the Romulans to have a KR, but it had two G-Torps only. Or if you had a Gorn heavy cruiser, not the battle cruiser.
Right.
Or if you had a Klingon that could only fire one drone every two turns. Or if you had a Fed with no... Well,
standard
D7, drone,
yeah.
I imagine the drones were all like speed 10 or speed 16 or whatever. And the Kazintis had a ship based on the strike cruiser, so they had reduced warp power, and they had slower drones, and they had only two disruptors instead of four. And the Hydras had no Hellbore, that sort of thing. That's basically what... and then you were trying to basically work up from that. So in a sense, that's kind of basically where most of the Omega Empires are at this point. Because the thing is, if you look at it historically speaking, now just to do another Federation Commander plug, I should point out that the Middle Years is in FC in briefing two. So the ships, they aren't color laminated, but you can either download them as PDF packs, or you can get the book in print from ADB directly.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically shows the ships without the refits and stuff. So in that, for example, if you look at, say, a D6, it's or a D7 or a CA or whatever, Kazinti Strike Cruiser and stuff, whatever, they don't have the fixes that make them great later on. And like, for example, like the Lyrans, their ESGs don't have capacitors. So suddenly you're having to figure out where the power is going to come from at the point that you're actually hitting them.
Right.
So now that should bear in mind that...
I didn't know that the middle years Lyrans did not have capacitors on their ESGs.
Well, remember, the capacitor was a refit in like Y167 or Y162 or Y1 something. Anyway, so basically, during the middle years...
I was not aware of that.
Yep, that's right. Basically, you can imagine if you've got a Lyran CA... now, there's no such thing as the Trimaran ships back then as well, so you only have the Catamaran ships. And there's no... packs, there's no refits or anything like that. And you're basically having to get up close to use the ESG. And then you're basically having to think, okay, so do I have enough power to do this, whatever. Now, it's different because in SFB, the ESG is a continuous thing. But in Fed Commander, the ESG is only works instantly. Like, it basically literally creates an expanding sphere. So in the FC version of things, the Lyrans have been much tougher. But that's the point, because it's meant to represent the what we think, because the thing is that so many people jump forward to the General War period or whatever like that, does they think that it's kind of like the transition period, but in reality that period went on for like 40 years, so it was basically the era of the original series, in the sense that you know, you had a Fed ship that in FedCom they don't give you them, like, you know, in SFB you can fire directly back through the nacelles if you've got like a Fed CA or something like that. They don't let you do that in Fed Command or whatever. So, but yeah, there's all these things and stuff, whatever, where now in Omega, it's part of that, but not entirely, because usually the Omega Empires, their middle year ships, they've got more weapons, but they usually have the speed limits in terms of the warp capability, whatever. Or they're just kind of like they're not quite, I mean, like they're meant to kind of, like, you're meant to think about like your average light cruiser would have only maybe two heavy weapons instead of like the four on a war cruiser, or maybe three if you're lucky, like the Misron light cruisers.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, but it only has the shields of a destroyer, so you have to be careful with it, like take it into trouble. But yeah, so there's like, I don't know if it's entirely, I mean, like maybe in the future, if we get a chance to see like what a proper war cruiser looks like, or what, you know, because we have a glimpse of that with the Vari, because like the wing cruiser is a hell of a lot better than the light cruiser. It's got like 11 more points of power, and it can fight at speed 31, and it's got four quantum wave, it's got four particle splitter torpedoes. So you can do a lot of different things with that ship. But compare that to the light cruiser, it's like night and day. But before Captain's Log 23, only Bruce Graw probably would have known that ship existed. So fortunately, it exists so we can, and even it's not a proper war cruiser because it's still built with peacetime construction. But nonetheless, it basically gives an example of what can be done with some of these empires. Like, not necessarily in terms of giving them better weapons. I don't know if that's the solution, but in terms of like playing to their strengths more, or involving, you know, making different things available. So, but anyway, so where were we? I think we were supposed to talk about the Osmonds at some point. Tomorrow, but anyway,
Well,
I think we got a little late for that.
I think we went on a wild goose chase.
Oh, no kidding. And as I've always mentioned, and anytime I post about these podcasts, is that the subject, the topics are the change without previous notice, basically.
Warning.
Previous warning, yeah.
So the Kolagar, you haven't done them yet. Is that correct?
Well, they don't exist in like a playtest pack yet, but I mean, I have a few ideas about how I want them to work. I think that they'd be
my suggestion is they used microphasers, and the microphasers I like a lot. They at longer ranges they're a little less powerful than alpha phasers, and at shorter ranges they're actually a little bit more powerful than alpha phasers, and that kind of works out pretty well. But there's one rule in there that Bruce put in there, and I'm looking at that one rule, and I've had this argument with Steve Petrick, and I just couldn't get him to come around to my way of thinking. Is it's like this, it's a regular phaser, except that it damages plasma torpedoes 1-to-1. And I know Bruce put that in there, and it's like, why? There's no reasoning behind that. It makes no sense. And all of a sudden, what that means is that the Kolagar can wipe the floor with against any plasma armed race in existence. So their standard heavy cruiser can run through an EPT plasma S, just their heavy cruiser, and phaser it down. Think about that. It can take zero damage from an EPTS.
Well, think about it like
phaser
this.
Phaser power.
Like the Kolagar were basically designed to fight like the plasma equivalents that they're up against. Like, for example, their next door neighbors in one direction are the Prober, and the heats. Now, ordinarily, heats have a 3-to-1 that
Correct.
Reduction factor. It's down to 2-to-1 against the Kolagar and stuff, whatever. So, which helps a bit, I guess. The Trobrin, I mean, yes, they have implosion torpedoes, and yes, it's a 1-to-1 against them. But the Trobrin still have pretty big ships, and they have like the implosion bolts and stuff, whatever. So, the Trobrin could basically try to go bolt heavy against the Kolagar if they want, and that's not going to make life easy for the Kolagar either, because the Kolagar have a problem in terms of concentrating their heavy weapon fire, because they've got like a 32 impulse delay for their antimatter cannons. And but also in the other direction, the Vari, they eventually get the particle splitter torpedo, and I guess you could do the 1-to-1 on them. But the trick then is to kind of figure out like, when you're actually going to do the shot, because if the Vari are firing them at long range, then they're going to split, and the point will be to target things like fighters and stuff, because the Kolagar don't have, well, I mean, they have suicide shuttles, I suppose, but it's a question is whether or not it's worth diverting power, like the phasers away from the enemy ship to try to target down each of the submunitions. And also, I guess the Alonda have whipcraft torpedoes, but they're kind of like they're very low power.
They're so
like each individual
very
one,
low power.
So.
Yeah,
but there's, I guess, further away you've got like the Branthodons and stuff, whatever. But even then, I mean, like, they're not really like a regular enemy of the Kolagar. So it's more like, It's one of those weapons that was basically intended to work in its native setting, and whether it actually has trouble like carrying
but
over.
Let me rephrase that. The Mazarons, for example, are much more likely to run into a plasma armed race because they've got the Trobriand, they've got the Prober, they've got the Vari, and they're all in contact with them. The Trobriand are on the far side of the Mazaron Empire from the Kulagar. So the Kulagar are almost certainly not going to run into very many Trobriand. They wouldn't design their ships to fight that.
Well, actually, they do end up because bear in mind that the Mazarons lost a massive chunk of their territory, even the territory that you see. Because if you look on the map for Y-162, the Mazarons have a very small bit of territory.
Yes.
That's actually slightly more than at the lowest ebb, because the Trobriand actually pulled back from even further into Mazaron space, because the Trobriand were actually directly fighting the Kulagar and the Vari and the Prober all at once. And then during the Second Great War, the Trobriand did it again. Like, they pushed very far to the point where they were actually pushing up against the Kulagar directly. So there were at least two major conflicts in which the two empires did end up squabbling, whatever. So, And also, during the Superpower Wars, that was basically when the four surrounding empires were all teamed up. The Kulagar were allied with the Prober against the Vari and Trobriand. And I know that there was a Vari expeditionary force that fought alongside the Trobriand in Prober space. I'm not too sure about what happened with the Kulagar and stuff, whatever. But yeah, there basically are situations, circumstances in which the superpowers would get a chance to go at each other.
It's just that's the only phaser in the game that has that rule. And it's like, really? So this weapon is balanced against everybody else, except anything that's plasma, and it's like, I'm gonna dominate. It's like, if you're gonna have rock, paper, scissors, why do that to make it really powerful against just these empires and nobody else? It's like that's almost an deliberately unbalancing rule is what I'm saying. And that's why I have a problem with it. Because it says, okay, certain empires I specifically have an advantage against. And all I remember is that when I built the tournament cruiser for the Kulagar, I put on the SSD deliberately. I said, and that rule does not apply to this ship. It's microphasers damage plasma 2-1, just like anybody else. And we balanced that ship, and it was perfect. I mean, it was not too powerful. It was not too weak. It was just Goldilocks. And I had it all balanced, and everything worked. And it didn't matter who you were fighting. It was a good fight. I mean, it wasn't too hard. It was perfect. And then Steve said, nope, got to take that rule out of there. I've never been able to get that ship to work ever again. Never been able to rebalance it. Because against anybody with plasma, it can't lose. And with anybody who doesn't have plasma, they can't win. So that's how unbalancing it was.
Wait a minute. That makes no sense.
Okay. So
I understand the whole thing with against plasma-based weapons and plasma races that...
Yeah.
Sorry, empires that use plasma-based weapons. But why would that make any difference to non-plasma-based empires?
It doesn't. Okay, let me rephrase that. Okay, when I took out that rules so that it did plasma damage 1-to-1. Any plasma race it came up against, it just wiped the floor with them. It wasn't even a contest.
Right.
So I had to figure out how to neuter it a little bit so that it didn't do that. And what I did was I ripped out a whole bunch of phasers and added some heavy weapons.
Ah. So basically it's due to you're trying to rebalance it to...
Right.
Okay.
And I said, well, the phasers are the unbalancing equation, so let me get rid of a whole bunch of phasers and then put more heavy weapons on it. And it just didn't work.
Understood.
Yeah. And that's it's like, and I tried explaining that to Steve Patrick, and he just wasn't hearing any of it.
Yeah, well, at the same time, you know, but it's basically, okay, as it is.
And that was a tournament-only rule. And
yeah, you can't do that when it comes to...
I know.
That kind of weapons functionality. Obviously, they've kind of done certain things when it comes to that for certain systems, like cloak, like the displacement devices, yeah, which I find annoying to no end.
Yeah.
Because I think that I should get the 12 hexes.
That.
I should get the 12 hexes. And I should be able to displace my freaking opponent if I wish. Because, come on.
Well, you've had the same issues with the Andromeda trying to balance the tournament cruiser for that.
I understand.
And we all know that when it's been just a...
Well, yeah, but at the same time, I'm not trying to change the rules for it. The biggest issue.
Well, it did change the rules.
Barry, the biggest issue with the balancing the
displacement device. Yeah. It's only usable on you.
Barry. Okay, let's back up on when it comes to the displacement device. I mean, the displacement device for the Andromeda against an opponent really doesn't matter. This is why.
Yeah, that's true.
Because of... Even if you displace a person's ship, that one ship, even, and he's controlling seeking weapons, he does not lose control of those seeking weapons because of they're targeting you, and that's the controlling ship. You know, there's special rules that where basically it doesn't matter that I can't displace my opponent. It'd be nice.
But you could displace a plasma R.
Right. Understood. And I agree that would be nice, but I don't think it's a breaker. And I agree that you know that shouldn't have been, maybe that should not have been changed. But
yeah,
that's water under the bridge. The biggest issue currently with balancing the Andromeda, because that issue there has nothing to do with balance. From the current when it comes to the current Andromeda, I feel like the current issue is that we can't get enough people involved in playtesting the Andromeda to say, okay, this is the good one. And put those reports to Steve Patrick saying, okay, these are the battles that occurred. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did
test that Telegar. I tested quite extensively, and I gave Steve that data, and he just said, no.
Yeah, but, okay, getting back to the Omegas then. The way I feel is that the Omegas were never really play-tested that well, and Lord knows, my understanding of the playtest groups is that they were basically, they come rushing in, you know, first battle pass, see how, you know, dish out as much damage to each other as possible, and then that'll be the end of the game. To see who would win at that point. It's like, that's the beginning. You know, there's different tactics that you can use against people. This is stupid. You know, but it is what it is.
Well, one thing is that, I mean, when it comes to playtest data, maybe it would make more sense to actually test historical ships. Because, I mean, if you're playtesting a ship, like a tournament ship, that doesn't exist in the sense that it's not like a sanctioned ship, or it's not even one of the ones that they have on the list of ones that they might consider. but rather if you're taking an actual historical Caligar squadron and then putting it up against an equivalent force from the Romulans or Gorns or whatever, or ISD. Mm-hmm. But I also, in terms of like, just making sure that the, like for example, if are you testing the Caligar historically, are you testing their heavy cruiser against the unrefitted Gorn CA, or are you testing it against a fully tricked out battlecruiser? Because grenades and shotguns and stuff, whatever like that, which the you know the Omega Empires don't have. So it's a question.
What I did, Gary, what I did for the Caligar tournament cruiser, I took their standard CA straight out of the SSV book, and I gave it 30 warp. I gave it 5 batteries. I gave it 2 tractors, and other than that, it was identical to the tournament to the heavy cruiser in their in the SSD book, and it just worked out perfect with by discarding the 1-2-1 microphasers and making them 1-2 against plasma.
Well, I'm trying to say though is that in terms of presenting the data to ADB, maybe if it's an issue that's affecting the historical ships and so forth of the rules, then it might make more sense to like compile data that has historical ships on both sides. And so if that's kind of showing that it's not basically just kind of like an issue in tournament, that if people are playing like say like the battle group scenarios, like, you know, each issue of Captain's Log, they have like the 550 point mm-hmm. things where basically people kind of draw up squadrons or whatever, and then they have at it or whatever. So now most of the time those get corralled into, you know, Omega v Omega, LMC v LMC, Alpha v Alpha and so forth. But if there's a way, I mean, if it's basically the kind of issue that would need to be addressed, not just like in a tournament level, but even like for the actual historical weapon, then I think mm-hmm. that there would need to be that kind of historical data. And also there need to be an account of like, okay, so what is the Plasma Empire player doing? Is he bolting? Is he using his carronades? I mean, if it's middle years, he won't have carronade, but he'll still have bolt. Like, are they using shotguns and so forth? I mean, like, how many torpedoes are they encouraging the Caligar to try and shoot down? I mean, mm-hmm. I mean that some of that's not an issue in Federation Commander because things like shotguns don't and envelopers don't exist in FC. So, right. But it's basically like these kind of things and so forth, whatever that would basically, you know, I don't know how else to put it, but that might be a more effective and normal thing. Because I mean, I can't speak for ADB, but
yeah,
it would seem that if the goal is to basically raise the issue in terms of the weapon having this problem, then yeah, maybe that might be a more effective way to have that issue be raised. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I had that argument years ago, and I'm almost past that point. Sadly, I'm just like, whatever.
Understood. You did the good fight, and then you're done.
I'm done. It's like, you know, I could see that the, you know, it's like, whatever. And there were a few other things where it's like, this just doesn't make any sense. Well, you know, it was test. No, it wasn't. And it's like, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. With that, I think we will.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting. I have to get to sleep. I have to work tomorrow.
Yeah,
early wake up.
Understood. I'll wrap it up with that. Then, Barry, it was wonderful having you on.
Same here. Thank you.
You have a good night, Gary. Also, always happy to hear your lovely voice.
Thank you, and best luck, and stay safe, everyone.
Okay, you too.
Let's say stay safe. Yeah. Bye.
Okay. Bye. So, then things didn't go according to plan. Big surprise. around here, when I throw up a topic, and it's like, oh, this is how the topic for tonight. That didn't go. Okay. That's fine. Well, I think we had quite an interesting discussion about the Omegas, both the Federation Commander and the SFB, and also, of course, covering some of the tournaments. Now, obviously, you know, the overall balancing of these ships is not easy, and Lord knows. Also, getting the playtest rules for Federation Commander out would be really nice. Obviously, that means more people need to play it. So if you can, you know, go get it from Warehouse 23, or I think, I'm not sure if they have Drive-Thru RPG, but I know definitely Warehouse 23, because that's where I get all mine. So maybe it's like supporting Steve Jackson Games, and what he does. But overall, you know, it's a good store. You can buy all kinds of online items there. But so it, you know, I think Finnish Commanders is nice, and as it's the reminder, which is, you know, the whole idea of Federation Commander is to boil down the rules of SFB down to basically what is the root of the weapon. Now, I think they didn't quite get the Andromedans correct, but I'm not sure how you could do it given the limitations of the systems that we're involved in. Just like converting SFB Andromedans to Starmada. Not quite the same, because the biggest issue there, of course, is that when it comes to Starmada and Andromedans, there's no energy. You don't have energy. You don't spend energy. You know, it makes things kind of difficult when part of the whole dynamic of the Andromeda is that you dish in power, and then that power is then used to charge its weapons, which then it uses to weapons against you. You know, that kind of that whole dynamic there cannot be duplicated in a system that doesn't have that ability to show it. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.